Maka. Maka.
It hasn't come on yet.
All right, thanks.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
I appreciate you waiting, but somebody could have texted me. I would have been earlier because I lost track of the time.
Well, that's okay. I'm just being quiet.
I understand. I guess what I have to do is... I gotta open up the class. Where are we?
I think sins in the reincarnations, chapter 22, section 6.
Okay.
I don't think I missed. When I think I was here, you know, I've been.
I think you're right.
I just read it while I was waiting, and
I think it's class number 25. Sins and their reincarnations, chapter 22, section 6. And that is coming on the row 11 of the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, the second column from the left. That opens up the advanced reincarnation classes. And so if you'll scroll down to class number 25 and... right now it doesn't say A, but it will say A the next time I fix it. One who speaks lashon hara, slander. Actually, it's not slander. Slander is something worse or similar. Will reincarnate into a stone, which cannot speak. And as we said in the preceding section regarding Naval, the Kamali, since the opposite of speaking is silent. Someone who feeds improperly slaughtered meat, in Hebrew the word is nevela, to a Jew coming back as a leaf on a tree, is the level of vegetation. The wind blowing the leaf back and forth will never allow him rest. And this will be his punishment. When his time is over, the leaf will become detached from the tree. It will wither, in Hebrew, which is the word novelet, and fall to the ground. This is an example of a real death for him, one who was cut off and uprooted from the world. And this is an indicating, since he's given treif meat, improperly slaughtered meat, to a person, he has caused that person a form of spiritual death. And so he's receiving the reincarnation that balances that action. Sometimes the withered leaf can return as another leaf, which will wither again. And as I'm reading this again, I'm remembering other aspects of the Zohar and other statements about reincarnation that I've read. And you have situations such as a mass murder, where a person has killed more than one person. They might reincarnate as a leaf, to have to go through many different deaths, many times where the leaf is blown off the tree. So if they killed 25 people, God forbid, they would have to go through 25 reincarnations into a leaf and experience the wind blowing them off the tree, falling to the ground, and that form of spiritual death that they would experience 25 times. That's just my thoughts. It's not something I've read. Continuing to read. This is the secret of the verse, "The leaf will wither," from Jeremiah. Since one who feeds nevela to a Jew, reincarnates into a leaf that withers and falls to the ground. This is also the secret of the verse, "You will be like an elm tree with withered leaves." Because sometimes the withered leaf can return as another leaf, which will wither even many times. As in the case of a person who has to reincarnate many times in this world to receive his specified punishment. This is consistent with what I had just said. Some people reincarnate into water, which is considered on the level of vegetation, as we've mentioned previously. This can happen to a person who spills blood in this world. And you can remember this from "You will spill it," where "you will spill it" blood on the ground like water. It also says, "One who spilled the blood of another." His blood will be spilled, meaning that he will be placed under a flow of water that will pour on him constantly. He will want to get up and stand, but the water will constantly pour on him, and he will find no relief, constantly rotating in circles under the flow of water. Anyone meant to die by strangulation will reincarnate into water. This is hinted to in the verse, "We will all die, like water flowing along the ground," that connects, "Shall we be collected?" As well, anyone meant to die by strangulation, but who was not punished by a court, will reincarnate into water and so be strangled every moment. One who commits adultery with a married woman and who is therefore punishable by strangulation will reincarnate into a grinding stone into which wheat is placed and which uses water to grind. That is where the man and woman will be judged in the secret of "For another my wife will be ground." The word "grinding" is used here as a euphemism for marital relations. One who is not scrupulous with the washing of the hands before eating bread will reincarnate into water. This is the secret of the verse. Then they would have surged across our soul, the treacherous waters. Blessed is Hashem, who did not present us as prey for their teeth. The head letters of Nisananu, Tereth, Treth, Lish, and Ahem did not present us as prey for their teeth. Spell the word Nun Taf Lamed, meaning to wash. We must thank God that we, unlike the wicked, wash our hands. This is the secret of what the sages say. One who eats without washing his hands is uprooted from the world and is judged with water. There is a hint to this from "Blessed is God, who did not present us as prey or their teeth, whose head letters, the beginning letters, spelled the word Nun Taf Lamed, meaning wash. By washing one's hands, one is not given as prey for their teeth, that is, of the surging waters. Therefore, we must thank God that we alone, we, unlike the wicked, wash our hands. One who does not recite blessings in advance of enjoying something, treating them with no respect, or steals from his father or mother, or befriends a destructive person, also reincarnates into water. Some reincarnate into animals. A community leader who lords himself over others reincarnates into a bee. As Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, pride does not suit women. Two women were proud, and the names of both were not positive. One was called Bee, and the other was called Weasel. He was referring to Deborah the prophetess, who lorded herself over Barak when she sent for him and did not go to him herself. The other was Huldah, the prophetess, who insulted Josiah, the king, when she said, "Speak to the man," as opposed to "Speak to the king." As the sages say, from their words you can see that Deborah was a proud woman, and therefore she didn't perform any work, and was very talkative, never remaining silent. Therefore, a leader who lords himself over the community and one who speaks improperly comes back as a bee who have these two traits. That is the end of section 6. There is a lot of material covered in this section that if we contemplate it and try to apply the messages in this section to people that we have known who have passed, does it make sense how these reincarnations are extremely just based on the actions that people do? Are there any questions? Section 7. The title is Bet Din, Enforcers, and Other Incarnations. Regarding these types of Gilgulim, or any soul that is judged in the heavenly court, someone goes before him continuously, announcing his Gilgul, or punishment, never leaving him. There is also one enforcer assigned to him, punishing him as is fitting. For example, in the case of one who reincarnates into water, the enforcer stands over him continuously, constantly lowering him into the water for the duration of allotted time. The enforcer stands over him continuously, constantly lowering him into the water for the duration of the allotted time. As well, for the majority of reincarnations or punishments mentioned, there is a court before him during the period of the Gilgul, or the punishment, judging him, changing his punishment from time to time according to what is fitting for him. Shmuel said, "I found another collection of writings of those close to the Arizal, and even though within them are words of the Rav, it seemed that they are not from the mouth of my teacher, the Rav, the great feeder of all, as he, the author, wrote. Nevertheless, I will present them. This is what I found in the book of Harav Eliezer Halevi. Though he, in my humble opinion, without doubt, they are not from my teacher." One who has relations with an animal reincarnates as a bat. One who has relations with a nidah reincarnates into a female Gentile with a married woman into a male donkey, with his mother into a female donkey. One who commits homosexuality reincarnates into a coney or a rabbit, depending on whether he was the one committing the act or to whom it occurred. This is an unwritten commentary, but there's a hint in this paragraph relating that homosexuality is being limited to the act of sodomy. One who has relations with his daughter-in-law reincarnates into a mule, with a non-Jew into a female Jewish prostitute, with one's stepmother into a camel, with one's sister-in-law, his brother's wife, into a male mule, with one's sister through his father or his mother into a chasida, a stork, and his companions will kill him. This is the secret of the verse. If a man takes his sister through his father or his mother, it is a chesed. And chasida is similar to the word chesed. It is the same for one who has relations with his mother-in-law. One who constantly looks at those forbidden to him and gazes at them will reincarnate into a white vulture. One who lies with a domesticated animal, a wild animal, or a bird reincarnates as a raven. One who constantly looks at those forbidden to him and gazes at them will reincarnate into a white vulture, a ra'ah, who can ro'eh, see the farthest of all the birds. All of this is only when he has not done teshuvah. Shmuel said, this is the correct location for another introduction that I already wrote about in Sha'ar Ma'amrei Chazal regarding the reward for the righteous and the Chibut HaKever, the cleansing of the grave. This is the end of section 7. Does anyone have any questions?
Was the cleansing of the grave ever mentioned in our advanced reincarnation classes?
Yes.
Okay.
It's mentioned here, and I think it's mentioned earlier, but it definitely is described as how the grave is put 6 feet down, and then it expands so that the person's soul stands up out of the body, at which point the angels, the demons, are in that place, and they whip the soul with fire. Does that ring any bells for you, Connor?
No. The only thing I remember is from Rabbi Pinchas Winston's book about making Aliyah. But I see it so connected on Hoshana Rabbah when we beat the rulers on the ground. But that's my thinking. Yeah.
Well, it is connected to the beating of the willows on the ground, because the willows represent judgment that we are breaking by beating them on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the beating in the grave is exactly the idea of the judgment breaking the soul from the body.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the Zohar, I can check the index. there might be something in the Zohar.
There is. There's in a few more than one place.
Okay.
As you'll find out.
See, I didn't remember this particular lesson, but I didn't have any notes, so I could have, you know, dates or anything. I didn't remember it, but
so let us go forward with the soul fallen into impurity is chapter 23, section 1. We already know from the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer in the discussion of Hibut Hakever, torments of the grave, about the angel that comes to a person's grave and asks him, what is your name? The person that answers, God knows that I don't know my name, or other similar statements. The Baal Shem Tov recommended saying, after each Amidah prayer, a verse of Psalms that begins and ends with the same letter that begins and ends one's Hebrew name, as a memory aid for that time. My commentary. There is a few Kabbalistic commentaries that explain that the asking for the name serves two purposes. One is for the soul to realize that it has forgotten its soul name, since it is so connected to the physicality. The other is for the soul to become embarrassed at how far he has fallen during this lifetime and to realize that he needs to cleanse from these mistakes. The person then answers, God knows that I don't know my name. This is strange, but what does asking this question accomplish? And why does he forget his name? How does this help with the administration of punishment? As we have said before, all souls were included in Adam before the sin, and that after he sinned, limbs fell off him. As a result, the souls that were a part of him fell into the depths of the Klipot, and Adam fell to the level of only 100 Amot, as we spoke about elsewhere in chapter 7. Not all the souls were equal, since the defect was not the same for all limbs. The limbs that were most affected by the sin of Adam fell deeper into the Klipot than other limbs, more distant from the blemish. As a result, some souls pursue sin more than others. Adam Bliya'al, the despicable man, mirrors Adam de Kedushah, the man of holiness. Thus, the impact of the sin on a limb determines how deep it fell into the Klipot, since God made them correspond to each other. In other words, Adam Bliya'al, the despicable man, mirrors Adam de Kedushah, the man of holiness, and also has 248 limbs with 365 sinews or tendons. The limbs used by Adam to commit the sin fell from him to the corresponding level within Adam Bliya'al. There they were enveloped and enclosed by the Klipot on their corresponding level. For all the ways of Hashem are just and straight without confusion, and thus every limb fell to the corresponding level within Adam Bliya'al. Therefore, all souls that fell from Adam, though enclosed in holiness prior to the sin, lost their crowns and glory after falling into the Klipot, and instead donned clothing of Klipot. Hence, all souls have a level of Klipot that acts like clothing attached to it, according to the effect of Adam's sin on it. That Klipah clothes the soul and encircles it all the days of its life in the physical world. Even though the soul is holy and spiritual, it is nevertheless garbed in klipot and dirt. That section is complete. Does anyone have any questions? We can go on to class 26. We have some time, which starts with the handout 32, and it starts chapter 23, section 2. Unless you'd like to stop here and start pleading with this new section next week.
It's up to Malka if she wants to keep on. I actually don't have the handout in front of me. I see the next section I have printed as well from 32. So, from when we took it before. So I evidently have a host been missing quite a bit.
The title of the section is Sin and Impurity in Zuhama.
Okay. Well, I can find it online and catch up, print later. And just listen. Does she want to go on?
I think this is a lot of information. Very interesting.
Yes, it is.
And I would like to just go back and review first. Before moving
no
on.
No problem. Yeah, that's why I asked the question. I was getting that sense. There is a lot of information that we read very quickly. I've done this now.
What?
This is the second time, and I did it quickly the last time. And there was something I just read that reminded me of there's a person I need to talk to. One of my students that I don't think any of you know or normally doesn't listen to the recordings, but I speak to all the time. And she had a situation where, God forbid, her son-in-law was actually raped her. And I don't remember ever reading that we just described that he would reincarnate into a chasida, which is the word?
Stork.
What's the bird? The stork.
Stork.
The one. Mm-hmm. And see, for us, I think what we see the most is having opportunities not to wash the hands, especially when we're at the synagogue.
Right. I think a big part of everybody's life is Asherana, the speaking of people, in a negative way is a big issue as well. When you deal with, when you're in an environment of the workplace, it's very difficult. You have to really stop before you speak, and sometimes the tongue takes over before the mind does. So, you said that if you do Tisha B'Av, then these things will not happen if you do not go back to that lifestyle. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And I will also caution you so that you don't, that you're careful to judge yourself leniently, that we live in a generation that, let me describe it this way. The Bet Dins, the courts that we experience every night, is made up of men that come from our generation. They're righteous men. but they've experienced the conditions that we've experienced. So as you just described, and I agreed with you, sometimes you're at work, there's no two-handled cup. There's no way to really wash your hands properly. And it's difficult to bring a two-handled cup into a working office that is not open to it. And so the Bet Din that is judging us is aware of the world that we live in. And they judge us with that leniency. Yes, they're righteous, and maybe they never did the action that's being described of not washing. But they're aware of the influence of the other nations upon us. And so it's judged with leniency. So we need to judge ourselves with leniency. So I caution you about that aspect. I hope I'm being clear about what I'm saying.
Yes, sir.
I know, like, when I was in the hospital with Tony, I just used just a cup. I thought just a vessel was enough. I mean, I have hand washing vesicles here at home, but in a place like that, I mean, I brought my own food, but I used a styrofoam cup to wash my hands and didn't think anything of it. I just thought as long as it was a vessel, it was okay.
And I agree with you, but I'll even go one step further. There are many times when I go to the bathroom and there's no two-handled cup in that bathroom, I wash my hands for cleanliness. And then I'll start over literally using, I'll turn on the cold water and just have two or three drops fall on my fingers. Because those two or three drops, the first two or three drops, have been in a vessel because they were stopped by the water. They were sitting in a vessel, which is the pipe that is the faucet. But once those two or three drops have run by, the rest of the water is not in a vessel. It's in a flowing state. So the only water that counts as properly washing your hands for cleansing is the two or three drops. So I'll do the cold water, the two or three drops, turn it off, and then do the hot water, two or three drops. It never gets hot, and then I'll do that back and forth three times. And that's what my teachers taught me as a way to wash your hands in bathrooms where there are no cups. So it's really the consciousness and the intent, which is what you're saying. Any vessel will do, even the pipe of the faucet, which we would normally not think of as a vessel. And again, I hope I'm being clear in how that's being described to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other questions?
What if you, you know, like I have a container with bacterial soap in it. Okay, what if you touch that to get soap on your hand, and then you use your hand washing cup and wash your hand, and then you step out, because I do that, but then I step outside in the hallway to say the blessing.
That's correct. You don't say the blessing in the...
Right.
But,
okay.
You know, if you're describing cleansing for dirt, for physical dirt, that's why you would have the soap. The washing of hands is really talking about the spiritual level.
Mm-hmm. But all the sneaking in the bathroom.
You wash your hands from the physical world, and you have to wash it again for the spiritual level, and that's where the vessel comes in.
Okay. Always felt like if you washed her up after you use the bathroom, gives you an opportunity to say more blessings during the day to try to make your 100. But it means
true.
You would really have to wash twice after the bathroom.
It's not really washing twice, but it is washing twice. It's you do once with soap and once with just water.
With the water, okay.
You all have a good evening, and
okay.
We'll have classes tomorrow. But I'm reminding you that probably Thursday night is the last class this week until Saturday. Hopefully I'll be moved by the end of Shabbat.
Okay, my daughter's going to have the surgery on her arm Wednesday, so and we don't know what time yet. They haven't told us, so I don't know what Wednesday will bring for me. Okay, thank you.
You have everyone have a beautiful evening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Oh.